Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up for tonight on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out, see what I thought about the show. And here to talk with me about tonight's show, which had quite a bit to talk about, is Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, say hey.
Hey, everybody. I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. My report for tonight's what I call the weird show is up at the Torch and on the VIP side for you to get my more detailed written thoughts. And if you haven't been able to catch the show, you can also get a play-by-play of what went down.
Yeah, and there was quite a bit that went down here tonight. This was really a rebuilding type show. Well, not really. I guess more of a
reset.
I guess a reset. Thank you. That was the word I was looking. I knew
it was
exactly
what I wrote in my report. That's a reset show.
Yeah,
after what
it was a reset
on Monday.
Exactly. We saw a lot of storylines finish on Sunday at Battleground. So you know, tonight we saw a brand new feud between Noam Dar and Carmelo Hayes, which I really liked for a number of reasons, which we'll get into. Actually, you know what? Let's get into it. Carmelo Hayes, Noam Dar. Carmelo Hayes, Noam Dar. Melo goes over in 11 minutes and 21 seconds. Earlier in the night, Carmelo Hayes was in the ring with Trick Williams celebrating his victory over Bron Breakker at Battleground when Noam Dar and his crew, we don't have a name for the faction yet, so in the hits and misses, I just started referring to them as the crew because it was easier. So, Noam Dar and his crew come out, that's Lash Legend, Jakara Jackson, and Oro Mensah, come out and essentially run Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes down a little bit. Noam Dar says that he's beaten Dragon Lee twice and he could beat Carmelo Hayes. Carmelo Hayes basically says, no, you can't beat me. Winds up challenging for a match for the NXT title in our main event here tonight. So, that's what we wound up seeing. However, the big news after the match, well, I guess it's big news after the match, the big after-match angle was as Carmelo Hayes was kind of, you know, celebrating his victory over Noam Dar and retreating to the back, holding the title high overhead. He gets attacked from behind by somebody wearing all black. And originally I thought it was Bron Breakker sporting a new haircut because, you know, he was bald. And then we saw the actual face of Bron Breakker, not Bron Breakker, but another B word, Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin returning to NXT, and after laying waste to Carmelo Hayes in the middle of the ring, holding the NXT title high overhead, I'm presumably signaling that he's coming back to NXT to gain a title that he never actually won. He believe he challenged for a handful of times, at least once, when he was in NXT during his first run down here, but never did win the big one. So looks like that might be who Carmelo Hayes' next challenger is on the VIP roundtable. And I believe last week on PWT Talks NXT, Kelly Bruce and I were talking about who the potential next challenger for Carmelo Hayes could even be. You know, we were looking up and down the roster, and we threw out a couple names, but nobody really seemed like a fitting challenger for Carmelo Hayes. So I'm really not surprised to see, to see a second free agent on the show, which we'll talk about the first one later on, but see a second free agent appear on the show later on tonight after the main event match to challenge for the title. Baron Corbin. Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess I probably would have rather seen somebody else. I don't dislike Baron Corbin, but he's Baron Corbin. Yeah, it's just like, okay, he's there. Like, it's fine. I think he's probably better served out in NXT right now. He's the main roster kind of name behind him at this point. I think it is kind of a big deal that he's coming down to NXT and challenging for the NXT title. I'm hoping it's kind of like a Dolph Ziggler type situation. I haven't processed whether I think he's going to win the title or not yet, but I hope it's kind of a situation where we have a main roster talent come down to put over the NXT talent, and that's probably what we're going to wind up seeing here. I hope they don't kind of steal exactly from the playbook and have, like they did with Dolph Ziggler and have Baron Corbin win the title for like 2 or 3 months or however long it was off of Carmelo Hayes and then have Carmelo Hayes win it back. I hope they do it in a little bit of a different way. Again, it just happened. Haven't quite processed how I want that to all play out yet, or different scenarios, how that could all play out. But there's a lot of different moving parts here. As far as the match itself goes, I thought the match was great. Trick Williams wound up getting himself ejected in the middle of the match. So Carmelo Hayes was pretty much alone against Noam Dar and the crew, as I've been calling them. So I thought a nice way of building Carmelo Hayes up, showing that he had some odds against him. But the real big thing here is I never thought I'd be talking about Noam Dar in the NXT title scene. I'm glad I am. I'm so glad I am. The dude is super talented, as we've seen over the past handful of weeks with everything he's been doing with the Heritage Cup. I loved and I gushed about him on the VIP after show for Battleground. You know, I loved the way he just kind of like comes to the ring cradling the Heritage Cup like it's his baby. You know, just those little tiny details that really help to build and solidify a character. But this entire like angle and everything here tonight wasn't necessarily about Noam Dar ever having a chance in hell of winning the NXT title. We knew that wasn't going to happen, right? But what it was doing was building Noam Dar up as somebody credible to potentially win, and actually challenge for the NXT title. Kind of bring him up a peg as the leader of a faction, and I think we'll probably see him, maybe not the main event scene, but I think this was really meant to elevate Noam Dar and the crew, as I've been calling them. I've rambled on for a while now, so Bruce, I'm going to let you talk for a little while.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. It's one of the few times I actually didn't interrupt you. So
that's true. I was on a roll.
Let's see here. Yeah, you were on a roll. The ejection of Trick Williams, let's get the proper context, because it wasn't like he got himself ejected. Legend and Jakara Jackson, they started getting in Melo's face as he went to the top rope, and so Williams came around to defend Melo. And then Mensah tried to attack him from behind, and he turned around and punched Mensah. Now, in the ref's infinite wisdom, he decided to eject Williams for punching Mensah instead of for the three of them trying to set up a sneak attack on him. But hey, what the hell do I know? So that's why he was ejected. And it was close to the end of the match because it was during the overrun. I think it was about 2 minutes into the overrun. I was keeping an eye on the time to get a gauge of when the match might end. So you have all that. And what I wrote is that this match told exactly the story that they were telling in the promo earlier in the night. Carmelo Hayes said to Noam Dar's face, "There are levels to this, and you are not on my level." The entire match, everything Noam Dar tried to do, Carmelo Hayes had a counter. Every strategy he tried to pull out, Carmelo Hayes was better than that strategy. So even with him pulling out all the stops, he was nowhere near defeating. I mean, they gave him some hope spots. He has some forearm elbow, and then the Judas effect that he throws are very quick but very effective maneuvers. And so They gave him those spots, but you, like you said, you didn't have any doubt as to who was going to win this match. And for me, I think it gives Dar something to build toward in the future, but I think this was just a one-off for the night, and he's going to go back to just doing his own thing with Jackson, Mensah, and Legend, which I think that's what they need to do, keep the Heritage Cup in its own little thing and establish itself as something that is unique but also something worth fighting for within the structure of NXT. So that's what I liked about this match. As you would expect with these two, fantastic match. But again, to me, it was about the story that was being told, and that's just Carmelo Hayes is right now just far and above anyone else on the roster. One thing I did notice, and it's not a size thing. Again, it's just something that I noticed because we've always been told and thought of Noam Dar as a cruiserweight because of his time on 205 Live. And, when he was younger, his look was just much more diminutive. He's put on more muscle since then. But when they're standing in the ring together for those introductions, he looked to be about the same height as Carmelo Hayes. So that was just something that stood out to me because I never thought of of the Scottish Supernova 11 as a, you know, sort of a bigger wrestler or anything like that. Post match stuff. Or real quick, I forgot to say. It's clear to me that Jakara Jackson is the designated holder of the Heritage Cup because that's what she was doing all night. And what was funny to me about the entrance is she held the Heritage Cup on her knee and Noam Dar kissed it and then bowed to it like it was some reverent sentient thing, or, you know. And like you said, just that sort of cringy possessiveness he puts on the title, it works for a wrestler like him and for his character. And he's, you know, I think the two of you said on Sunday that you don't see him as necessarily main event kind of caliber, but in ring they showed that he's definitely there. And character wise, this character might not be able to hit that mark, but I think he's shown enough with what he, with the characters that he's had, that you could make that shift to him as being the main event, the top-level champion in the future. He's still very young, and we've also discussed this on Sunday when it came to him and Tyler Bates. So they also have the youth working for them in terms of being a little patient with their pushes and letting them gain more experience and learn as they age into their prime, because I don't think they're even hit yet. So that's also a scary thought. But now to the post-match shenanigans with Baron Corbin. So the end of days was very nice. It was pretty. It was very smooth. But I'm hoping it's not Dolph Ziggler, and I'm hoping it's more Jinder Mahal, because I don't need to see Baron Corbin with the title. I don't think anybody wants Carmelo Hayes to lose the title to...
Jesus, I forgot Jinder Mahal came down already.
Yeah, to Baron Corbin. I don't think I don't want that, because that feud really... I think that was the moment we were just like, man, we're done with Breaker. Because I don't think he was able to actually improve within that feud. There was just a lot of yelling between the two of them, right? So for me, I would rather Corbin not win the title. But also, if it's a one-off, just bring the Lone Wolf gimmick back for his NXT gimmick, for his NXT days, and just simmer with the crowd and everything, because that was when Baron Corbin was at his best, in my opinion. And for NXT, I think his heat was really just like, we don't want you here, go away, heat, which could work for him as the heel in this feud. And I guess if it's a one-off, it works, because, you know, we were discussing, the one person we didn't discuss on Sunday was Ilya Dragunov, but since they're both kind of faces right now, it really doesn't work. Unless you go off the intensity and respect thing, but I think it would be better to wait for one of them to be a heel or have a new champion for Jagannath to be put into that spot. So you really don't have anyone else. I think the person that debuted earlier in the night has more, to me, has more credentials or more legitimacy to challenging Carmelo Hayes than Baron Corbin. But that has a lot to do with everything. So, yeah, I'm not too high on this, but as long as it's just a one-off feud and Hayes retains and the titles don't switch hands and go to play hot potato with it, I'm fine. I'll be fine with it. Because if it's meant to put Hayes over, then I'll be fine.
I think that's where they're going with it, is it's meant to put Hayes over. But yeah, I want to make sure they play this right. And I think they will. But, you know, I think I'm with you. I don't necessarily want to see Baron Corbin actually win the title. And I like, because I don't want to see main roster talent keep coming down and winning these titles. We also, as I mentioned earlier, we saw somebody else, another free agent, come down to NXT here tonight, Mustafa Ali. And it looks like he's potentially or probably going to be challenging Wes Lee at some point for the North American title. So I don't know. We kind of have we have two similar stories here. You know, obviously a little bit different. We haven't talked about Mustafa Ali yet, but right now it looks like, you know, he's either going to challenge out of respect or, you know, he's going to wind up turning on Wes Lee. You know, here with Baron Corbin, we see him just straight up attack Carmelo Hayes. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to see this happen all too often, because, you know, where this is a developmental show, I want to see people develop, but it's also a show. And, you know, as we were talking about last week, we're not, you know, there really aren't many people that could challenge Carmelo Hayes. So I'm kind of okay with the fact they're bringing somebody down to elevate Corbin. Baron, like I said earlier, Baron Corbin, meh. I wish it might have been somebody else. I can't think of who off the top of my head, but I'm not necessarily over the moon about it. But, we'll see. We'll see.
I will say this. If they weren't involved in a feud already and they wanted to stay in-house, I would have been really intrigued to see a one-off between Carmelo Hayes and Julius Creed. And to see how Julius fares in that situation, because we've all been talking about the potential of Julius Creed as a singles competitor. Give him a little bit of that taste now, give the crowd a little bit of that taste now, and see how he fares. Does he meet the level, or does he wither under the spotlight? So I feel like it's a very safe spot to do that. So maybe after Corbin, and maybe after, you know, this thing with Schism is over and Dyad is done, they could turn to Julius as another one-off feud if they don't see anyone ready yet in terms of the storylines for Carmelo Hayes. Because if you don't have anyone else, look at people who the crowd has been getting behind, regardless of what division they're in, and try to see what elevating them to that level does. And I think with Julius Creed, that would be I think it'd be a very safe spot to do that with Julius Creed, because sure, there'd be some pressure, but Carmelo Hayes would be the person that had the responsibility to carry the feud, and Creed is there to learn along the way. So I think that would be a good, and you know, the promo battle between those two and then the brothers, I think that would be a good one in the future.
Yeah, throw Ivy Nile in there too, and you know that could be entertaining. The other one that comes to mind in a very similar vein, and I think a little bit less so. I think I'd rather see Julius Creed, but is Josh Briggs, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
I think he'd be more legitimate, and I think I would look at him as more of a legitimate threat than a Josh Briggs.
Oh, 100%. Between the two, yes. If it was between the two, and I had to make a choice, it would be Creed all the way. But just as you were talking about the reasons why Julius Creed was your choice, I started thinking about Briggs. He's not necessarily, my first pick, as I was just saying, but, we just kind of flirted with a little bit of a singles run for Briggs. It was, I think, a week, maybe 2 weeks long, where he split from Jensen. But still, it was something we've been talking about for a while, how, we all have seen something in Briggs. We feel like Jensen's holding him back. So, again, it could be a safe spot for them to kind of flirt with, the idea of giving him a singles run or just play around with a few things.
Former Evolve champion, so he has a pedigree.
That's true. Actually, I forgot about that. That's a good point. So
I think he might have been the last. Was he the last Evolve champion? No. He's one of the last few, that's for sure.
I think, wasn't it Gacy?
Could have been.
That was the last one. I don't remember. For some reason that sounds right, but now I'd have to look it up. I'm going to quickly read an email from JB here, because it is about Noam Dar, and I probably should have read this before, but I hadn't actually read the emails before we went live. JB says, do you think it was too early to put Noam Dar into the title scene? He literally formed this stable two nights ago, and we still don't really know why or their purpose. While I really like Dar and I think is a high upside, I really don't see him as the leader of a stable. As always, love the show and go VIP. I think it all depends on what they want to do with Noam Dar. We've talked a lot about it at this point, but if this was a mechanism used to try and elevate Noam Dar to make him in this faction, the crew, to try and elevate them and make them seem more of a threat within NXT, then no, I don't think it was too early to do it. As we were literally just discussing, there really isn't a good challenger right now for Carmelo Hayes. So you've got to build somebody up, and developmental is a safe spot to try stuff. So I think it was an experiment. I think it was an experiment, and I personally think it paid off. I really liked what we saw out of this match tonight. In his second point here, where he says he sees that Dar has a high upside, but doesn't necessarily see him as a leader of a stable. He doesn't see him as the leader of a stable material. I kind of disagree. I think Noam Dar is going to kill it. And we're kind of already, like, you know, as Bruce pointed out earlier tonight, you know, Jakara Jackson kind of, you know, holding the title and, you know, Noam Dar bending down, kissing it and all that. Just all those little tiny detail things tell me that I think Noam Dar is going to do it. He can, like, do his best to try and make this stable work. And judging by the way he's made other characters work in the past, I mean, the whole thing with Alicia Fox, you know, that was kind of the quintessential take chicken salad or take chicken crap and turn it into chicken salad. You know, wasn't super, super great, but the fact that we're still talking about it, it was that memorable. Well, I mean, he did what he did. So I'm actually personally really excited to see what happens with, where Noam Dar takes this stable, and I'm kind of hoping it's not like Diamond Mine where, you know, they were built up, and then all of a sudden they kind of imploded, they were riddled with injuries, and now Diamond Mine is really just another name for the Creed brothers and Ivy Nile. So Bruce, on JB's email.
The only thing I'll add to that is I don't think so, because it also puts the other three in the spotlight and makes you aware of who they are and what their functions are, and compared to how they relate to Noam Dar here in terms of him being the Heritage Cup champion and all those different things. So for me, being able to see them on TV again, get over who they are, and if you watch, they did get over their characters too. You know, Legend is very arrogant, and so is Jackson, but Jackson also has that air about her. She ain't taking no crap. And then you have Mensa there, who's kind of the fall guy, more subservient to everybody. So it's like, I just like the fact that they're getting more TV time, and the fact that they, and you know, JB said, it was JB, right? This email?
Yep, JB.
Okay, JB said doesn't really know why they came together, how and whatnot, but it's because they flirted with Noam Dar, and they liked the flirt effect that happened, and then Dar asked Mensa to be in his corner, and he won Mensa over. So they showed those within the story, and I think that's why it worked. And I think what they noticed is that he's a Heritage Cup champion right now, so with him comes success. Yeah, he didn't win tonight, but when you weren't even on TV for however long, and all of a sudden you are with him, and he has a title, for lack of a better term, that's good for you and good for your career. So kudos to them, and I hope it works out. And I think they're going to be more of I can't think of a good intergender stable right now in NXT to compare them to, but I think they're going to be closer to a Toxic Attraction than they're going to be to a Diamond Mine or whatnot. And not in terms of like Dara's going to be champion, but I think they're going to be more in the main event than they are just a tag team team.
I hope so, yeah. And let's go over to an email from Kevin Catani. If you want to send us an email like Kevin and JB did, it's pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. You can also call in 515-605-9345 and press 1 if you want to be a part of the show. We do have some people listening here tonight, but nobody in the caller queue at the moment. So if you do want to jump in, hit 1 and I'll bring you on and we'll talk some wrestling. But anyway, let's go to Kevin's email. Kevin says, salutations, gents. Hope this email finds you well. Fresh off a solid battleground, I love the fact that Mello is going to carry the brand for the foreseeable future, and Gallus continues to be my guilty pleasure. As much as he serves the punch-me-in-the-face heat, I'm excited to see him back, as he'll use his Heritage Cup and his new group mechanisms to continue his heelish ways. I think he's talking about Noam Dar there, but he didn't actually name Noam Dar. So, okay. I was surprised to see Mustafa Ali show up. What do you make of it? Another main roster short-term stay or what? Lastly, where does the former Toxic Attraction go from here? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. Kevin Catani, PhD. So, a few things here. So, we talked a lot about Noam Dar. We'll talk about Gallus in a little while. But Mustafa Ali, we haven't talked about Mustafa Ali yet. So we'll go there, and then we'll talk about Gigi Dolin and JC Jane cage match, weaponized cage match, if you will. So Mustafa Ali showed up during Wes Lee and Tyler Bate versus Dyad. We saw Lee and Bate get the win in 9 minutes, 21 seconds. It was like shortly after the match kicked off. I want to say it was maybe 2 or 3 minutes into the match. Mustafa Ali showed up in the middle of the crowd. The crowd or the match came to an absolute like halt. Everybody froze. Everybody put their eyes on Mustafa Ali as he made his way through the crowd and to the announce desk during a commercial break. When they came back from commercial, he was on commentary essentially talking about how he's a free agent and if there's an opportunity for a championship, Mustafa Ali is going to be there. He presumably talking about the North American title. I don't know if he actually called out the North American title on commentary or not. I don't remember, but where he was here with Wes Lee, that kind of, that's what it's signaling to me anyway. Tyler Bate and Dyad did wind up getting, like I said, they got the win. Was there interference? I'm like forgetting the finish.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head.
So
help me.
There wasn't necessarily interference. Ava was outside. I'm not sure.
Right.
But the ending basically was that they hit, simultaneous or synchronous spiral taps on the top rope, and then Wes Lee took out Fowler on the outside with the tope con hilo, and then Bate hit the Tyler Driver 97. I'm pretty sure that...
And that was, that was the win.
Yeah, nothing with Ava came up until after the match.
Right. Yeah, Nile attacked Ava after the match, and then Joe Gacy attacked both Wes Lee and Tyler Bate. Mustafa Ali gets up off the announce desk and makes the save and holds Tyler Bate and Wesley's hands up high overhead to end the segment. So that's why, earlier in the night I said that, it looked like maybe Mustafa Ali is going to come in and challenge Wes Lee as kind of Tyler Bate just did, and do it in the name of sportsmanship. Or he's going to wind up turning on Wes Lee. It's going to be one of the two. We'll see how this plays out. We really don't have much more to go on than this. What do I necessarily make of it? Which was Kevin's question, is I think that they wanted to do something with this whole free agent thing. I mean, we have so many, I think we have 6 different free agents right now.
Including
Von Wagner. Brock Lesnar is another one, although I can't ever see Brock Lesnar showing up in NXT. I think that'd be kind of sweet for night. Just Brock Lesnar comes up, suplexes everybody in the ring all night long, and then that's the end of the show.
I saw it too, where someone's like, wait, all these free agents coming around going challenge people. Like, don't let Brock go down to NXT and challenge Carmelo. Because
right.
Brock's history with dethroning every single black champion there has been in WWE. So, yeah.
Actually, according to this, we got 10. Zion Quinn, Elias, Mustafa Ali, Shelton Benjamin, Cedric Alexander, Baron Corbin, Von Wagner, Dolph Ziggler, Omos, and Brock. So I kind of like the fact that we are seeing some of these free agents show up in NXT, because NXT, it's always that gray area. Is it a third brand? Is it not a third brand? Does it count? Does it not count? Like, does the NXT, on the main roster, sometimes they refer to NXT history, sometimes they don't. They've been more consistent with it, in recent years and whatnot. But even so, like, they'll still do it from time to time. So it kind of whatever fits the current narrative they're trying to tell in the main roster, I guess that all makes sense. all of that said, I like the fact that they're kind of including NXT with this free agent stuff. And it's not just Von Wagner, because, Von Wagner and Zion Quinn, for that matter, were only NXT, wrestlers. I don't even know if Zion Quinn showed up anywhere yet, to be honest.
I think he was on Raw.
I feel like I remember seeing him somewhere, but I can't remember where. But I'm glad to see that, other than just Von Wagner being on the show, because he hasn't really left the show. I know he's been on, I think it was SmackDown since, but he's still just, primarily on NXT, or at least he has been every week. We're now getting Mustafa Ali. We've got Baron Corbin. So they're including like NXT is part, you know, is kind of that third brand again, I feel like. But as I said earlier, I don't necessarily want the main roster stars to come down here and out and overshadow and outshine the developmental talent. I'd rather them work with the developmental talent to get them over and improve their skills in the ring, which I feel like is probably the plan and what they're trying to do. I just hope that, you know, that's the way it's executed and it comes across. I probably have more to talk about with all of this stuff, but Bruce, I'm going to throw it over to you and we'll go from there.
Yeah. We'll have to come back and hit the Jane Dolan stuff after this.
Yeah. Yep. I've still got that up on my screen.
When it comes to Mustafa Ali and him showing up, one, I'm of two minds of the match just kind of halting in the middle because Mustafa Ali appeared. One, I thought it was corny as all hell, and if I was the heels, I would have just gone straight after the faces, just gawking up at Mustafa Ali. Like, what? Why are you just stopping the match because someone showed up? Two, I could see the other side where, like, oh, the reaction that not only they gave him, but the crowd gave Mustafa Ali. If you were only watching NXT, you would think that he is someone kind of a star with that kind of reaction that he received, both from the wrestlers and the crowd. So I could see either side. I'm still leaning against kind of corny how they did it and having the match just stop like that, but okay. And then watching this, I was just like, man, I think I found who I want to dethrone Wesley as a North American champion, and that's Mustafa Ali. I think what we're heading toward is a four-way with the four of these men. Three of them, or two of them, challenging Lee off of respect and the spirit of competition, as Tyler Bate would say. And then Gacy, of course, just being Gacy. But I think that's the perfect time where Ali could pin the Gacy or Bate and take the title from Lee and then successfully defend against Lee in a singles match, in a rematch, and then go from there. The main reason for this is when I look at the rest of the roster, like, you could put Dragon Lee in that title scene, sure, but I feel like Dragon Lee, he's here to win the NXT Championship and then go on to Raw or SmackDown, and I feel like right now I don't think he needs a North American Championship, right? So for me, I think Ali is the next best person, and beyond that, I think when it comes to these free agents, you look at who's there and who's where. Maybe outside of Cedric Alexander, and, you know, they were the heart and soul of 205 Live, no one's a better fit for NXT better than Mustafa Ali. And, you know, his style, his heart, his character, and his ability to, I mean, people can say what they want about their feelings about him. I think a lot of that has to do with sort of their biases they don't want to discuss. But he can talk, and he's gone through so many different characters, and each time he's been able to sustain what little they gave him of a character through his promo work. And in NXT, be able to do that not just a lot more, but in a more confined space where he can still work on the tweaks and improve along the way with everyone else. And as you said, he's there to help teach people too, both in and out of the ring. So I feel like, and you know, you're looking at Hayes and then Wesley, and you're looking at the lineage. In terms of style and what they represent, he was the heart of 205 Live for a reason. So having him be the next North American champion, in my book, would be a great call.
Yeah, I think that would be awesome. And not that I necessarily want to see Wesley lose the title, but, I mean, he has held it for a while now. He's had a pretty decent
reign. And the
reason
I say this, too, is they really hammered home today with Mackenzie Mitchell that he's not just the longest reigning, but also the most defending North American champion of all time. Usually when they bring that kind of stuff up, unless it's Roman Reigns, it means you're about to lose your title. So
that's a good point.
He's established a record. He's established himself as the best North American champion in the promotion's history. It's only been a couple of years for that title. But if you look at the lineage of that title, you've had people like Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, Bronson Reed, Johnny Gargano, and he's the best of all of them, and not just the best in terms of length of reign, but he defended the title more than any of them. So he doesn't need to have the title anymore, in my opinion, and to move from him to Mustafa Ali, I think, is the best call.
Yeah, I think it's a great call. I mean, Mustafa Ali could be, you know, I mean, I'd say probably more of a transitional champion, unless they were going to keep him down in NXT, but, you know, where he is a free agent, I mean, hell, then, actually, you know what? I kind of even like that because he's a free agent. Maybe all of a sudden he shows up on he shows up on Raw or SmackDown, but he's got the North American title around his waist, which just gives more eyeballs to NXT.
Awesome theory. You think you're a great United States champion. Well, I'm a North American champion. That's even better than the United States. Go from there, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. I love it. Like, I think there's some really cool places that they could go if Mustafa Ali was a champ. So let's go, and we'll talk about the Toxic Attraction match here. If I bring my notes back up, where'd they go? Okay, here we go. Toxic Attraction. We saw Gigi Dolin versus JC Jane in a weaponized steel cage match, 12 minutes and 35 seconds. Gigi Dolin picking up the win and hopefully closing the door on this feud. I have a feeling that they're probably going to be almost Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens-esque, where they're always going to kind of wind up in each other's stories, as a lot of, you know, a lot of former tag teams that turn singles wind up doing. I guess Sami and Kevin are just fresh in my mind because everything they're doing is amazing right now. But I have a feeling that's probably going to be the case. But I think as far as this feud goes, fingers crossed, this is the end of it. We've seen this feud going for a long time at this point, and they haven't had the best chemistry in the ring. I do have to give them some credit tonight. Personally, I enjoyed this match. I went into this match with very, very low expectations for a number of reasons. First being what I just said. Dolin and Jane have not had the greatest of chemistry when, you know, they're in the ring together one-on-one, which I feel like is why they put together a gimmick match again for these two, to kind of hide some of those weaknesses and as well as play up the fact that this is a blood feud. And there's, you know, just a lot that is kind of at stake, I guess, bragging rights and what have you. During this feud, I feel like they pulled it. Oh, sorry. So that was the first reason. The second reason is weaponized steel cage matches just have not had a great history of the Ambrose Asylum, you know, for example, with Jericho and Dean Ambrose was a thing. Wasn't great. And there have been a couple others over the years that you know, I can't even remember. I know there's been at least one or two others, but they haven't really
been that bad.
That's exactly it. Like, I know they've been out there, but they've been so bad, I can't even remember what they were. So I went into this with very low expectations, and they definitely exceeded those low expectations. I don't think this was like, you know, to coin JR's phrase, a slobber knocker by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that they planned out the match very well. It seemed like the match was planned out. I feel like a lot of times they were rushing from spot to spot. One of the things I pointed out in the hits and misses was I just wanted them to sell a bit more. But that said, that kind of being my only real nitpick, I think they told a great story here. And I honestly loved the ridiculous finish of seeing tiny Gigi Dolin choke slamming tiny JC Jane off the top turnbuckle and through a table. Like, I wasn't expecting that. I feel like other than the Hurricane, you don't really see a smaller talent use the choke slam very often. So I thought that was cool. I think we've actually seen her, now that I'm speaking, I think we've seen her use a choke slam at least once before. Now that
Tegan
I think
Knox
about
tries.
Was it Tegan Knox I'm thinking of?
I know, I think Dolan's done it before. Tegan Knox tries. And then did you ever watch Impact or TNA in the last like 6 years?
Here and there, not regularly, no.
Andrew Everett, he was Cameron Grimes' partner in Impact when he was still Trevor Lee.
Right.
He,
okay.
His whole gimmick was that he says he'd be tall, but he's like 5'8", and he tries to do the choke slam as his finisher kind of thing. So.
No, that's true. That's true. I do. I don't think I've ever really seen his match, but I do remember. I do remember that. But still, you know, I mean, the choke slam. It's not. I mean, you associate that with, you know, bigger talent. So I just thought that was cool. Wasn't what I was expecting. Gigi Dolin, like I said, picked up the win, and I was hoping she would, and I think she needed this win to kind of propel her up the card a bit more. Like, we keep talking about JC Jane is probably, you know, we want to see the two of them get away from one another. But I think JC Jane's going to be the one to suffer a little bit here because she is the one that has a bit more to work on, both in ring and with her promo ability. I think Gigi Dolan's going to be okay. She's got some work to do, in both areas as well. But she's about a rung or two of notch or two above JC Jane, and I think the company sees more in her right now. Could be wrong, but that's just my perception anyway. So let me throw over to you on the weaponized steel cage match.
Yeah, I was a bit higher on it than you, maybe because I was doing the report, so I wasn't able to see all the little details, I guess. But I thought they were beating the hell out of each other, especially with that strap early on. Dolan had welts all over her body right away.
Yeah.
You said you wanted them to sell more. I felt like the screams of pain were selling the match to me. But like you said, the first two matches were not good. They didn't seem to have chemistry in there against each other. As a tag team, they had great chemistry. But against each other, they didn't seem to have great chemistry at all. Not even good chemistry. And here, again, I think the match was best of their three matches. And I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing that their best of their three matches came in a heavily gimmicked match. Generally, I'd say that's probably a negative thing, but we'll see. Maybe they took something from this match that they're going to implement into their future matches for each of them and improve from that. The story, as you said, was told well. It was, these two hate each other. It's blood feud. Jane didn't even let Alicia Taylor finish her intro for Gigi Dolan before attacking her during the entrance and throwing her into the cage a couple times and going from there. So, I think the pace was a bit fast on your end because they were just trying to do everything they could to beat the hell out of each other, right? Because it's a blood feud. We discussed on the VIP roundtable on Sunday, so if you're not VIP, go VIP, of course, and then try to find a number if you don't. But we discussed how it's just ridiculous that crowds go so wild for tables when tables literally lessen the blow and break the impact or something like that.
Yeah.
The ending spot I noted was probably the safest top rope table bump I've ever seen in WWE. She just kind of fell back flat and easily, and the table, I know they're pre-broke, but sometimes even when they're pre-broke, they kind of splinter in different ways. It just broke cleanly, and she just kind of fell back, and it was just that. And Dolan was definitely the person that had to go over here. She's been the one that's been built as a face, but not only that, they've clearly got behind her story. They haven't really given us backstory on JC Jane. They haven't shown us vignettes on JC Jane's upbringing or anything like that, but they have been doing that with Gigi Dolan. So they definitely see a singles babyface run in her now. How much of the run that she gets, who knows, but she definitely is the one who, both in terms of character and in the ring, is a bit more polished than Jane and has more of the crowd support regardless. So not surprising to see her go over here. Okay, and my big question was also, the doctor's question was, where do each of them go from here? So if you want to get behind Gigi Dolan as a face, who do you then have her face next? Who is a lower card heel that she could then feud with and come out over top? Is it someone like a Tatum Paxley? Would it be someone like a Jakara Jackson? Who knows at this point? And then for Jane, TV for a bit, and even just a few weeks, and then have her come back and have her call out somebody and go from there. There are a lot of faces right now who could use someone to feud with if they're not going to be Tiffany Stratton's next contender, right? Whether it's Roxanne Perez, Lyra Valkyria, you have Ulyssa Leon and Valentina Ferroz making their comebacks. You have Ivy Nile there. There are a bunch of people that she could feud with and most likely put over. So I don't know exactly what their ideas are for each of them moving forward because we've literally never seen them apart from each other except in multi-person matches for a title or for a contendership match. So they haven't feuded with anyone else. What's it going to look like when they're finally separated from each other and having to find other ways to make feuds and angles work with other wrestlers? That's the big question for me. I want to be hopeful.
Yeah, So do I. I want to be hopeful. I'm hoping that I'm hoping it all works out, because I want to see everybody be successful and all of that. I don't know. Like you said, we haven't really seen them apart. So really since their debut, really since they formed Toxic Attraction, I guess we did kind of see them on their own before Toxic Attraction got formed, very briefly, but that was before these iterations of the characters. So I guess I'll go with that. We haven't really seen them apart, in at least over a year. So I'm really curious to see what happens and if they can hold their own, in the next chapter of their NXT careers.
Last thing, just after the match, Mandy Rose tweeted "Wow" with 3 W's about the match. So she was definitely paying attention to her former stablemates and what they were doing tonight.
Yep. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right. Let us go to, I forgot to delete that. We already talked about that match, Lee and Bate and Dyad. Let's go to Joe Coffey versus Dax. That was 10 minutes and 1 second on a show that saw 46 minutes and 26 seconds of wrestling tonight, which seemed a little bit light. I think you tweeted earlier tonight that, like, in the first 70 minutes of wrestling, there was only two matches.
And that was
like
when
that.
They came back from commercial, they didn't have a match yet. So about the first 75 minutes of the show, there was only two matches. And then they fit three more matches into the last 45 to 50 minutes of the show.
Yep. So Joe Coffey and Stack. So earlier in the night, we saw Gallus, Joe Coffey, Mark Coffey, and Wolfgang backstage making fun of Tony D'Angelo and getting locked up, getting picked up, I guess, and locked up. And we saw a vignette earlier of him getting his mugshot taken, Tony D'Angelo being him, getting his mugshot taken. Stax overheard the making fun of Tony D'Angelo and stepped in and, I guess, courageously yet stupidly, very stupidly, attacked all three members of Gallus. Now, okay, you know what? It's a dumb idea to attack three people if you're just one person, but it's a really dumb idea to attack three people when it's Gallus. Anyway, as you'd expect, Stax got his ass handed to him, and selling the effects of that as camera cut away and we moved to the next segment or to a commercial break or wherever we went next. But we had a match made for later in the night, Joe Coffey versus Stax. As you might expect with a Stax match, he more or less spent the majority of the match getting his ass handed to him. Got a few spots in here and there where you thought he might turn the match around, but ultimately ended up falling to Joe Coffey, as I said, in 10 minutes and 1 second. And Joe Coffey essentially, I forget what he was saying but he was jawing off to Stax as he was walking up. After the match, he was walking up the ramp.
Don't ever come at me again or something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. I forgot to write it down. Essentially, Gallus kind of, I don't say writing off the D'Angelo family, but, trying to, end the feud or whatever. I have got to say, Stax is really, really winning me over. With his in-ring work, and I've been impressed with his in-ring work since Two Dimes was still around, right? So it's been a while. But his character work still probably needs some work, and mic skills and whatnot, but the dude's got some heart and I like the story they're telling with him. He's not that bright, but he's loyal as all hell. He'll go to bat for, the guy he's working for. I feel like they see something with Stax, and I think there's something there. I don't think it's going to be, main event level. We'll be seeing him headlining a WrestleMania or anything, but they see something there with him. And I think we're eventually going to see him split from Tony D'Angelo, wind up feuding with Tony D'Angelo. And eventually see the two of them kind of split off as singles. That's kind of at least what my my first, there was a shot of, as Joe Coffey was walking up and you know, jawing off to, jawing off to Stax as he's walking back to the ramp, back up the ramp, there was a shot of Stax kind of just like, he was kneeling down. I think he was holding the second rope and just kind of like breathing heavily, but he had this like look in his eye, like this determined look in his eye, like I'm not going to fail. Like, and just the fact that he was able to convey that look in the first place, I think says something. But I'm like I said, I'm really curious to see where this feud goes. And if he can actually hold his own as a singles, and right now the only member of the D'Angelo family that's not currently locked up or behind bars, or sleeping with the fishes. So let me throw it over to you.
Yeah, a lot. There's, again, a lot to unpack. So I want to put over NXT here for attention to detail, because if you notice, the mugshot was dated 5/23, which was last Tuesday, which is when D'Angelo was presumably arrested and booked into wherever. So give him props for that, for not making it today's date or anything like that, because that wouldn't have made any sort of sense. Next, Stax has, I mean, every time he gets in the ring, he's getting more and more impressed with his growth and his development. And one thing that, time I see him in the ring and that I feel like he just keeps improving upon is his selling within the psychology of what's being told. It's not just selling for the purpose of selling. It's selling with what is being told in the match and what the story is being told. So I feel like he's quickly learning and adapting in all the right ways and what you want from a developmental talent and a brand. So that's a good sign for Stax. And if I had to compare himself, he has a long way to go for either of these people, but I see him as sort of, he could be sort of a Mustafa Ali type or an NXT. And again, still a long way to get there, but with his selling, with his movement, with his snappiness in terms of and his movements, I think he has a shot to be sort of the next version of Roddy Strong in NXT. Not to say that he's going to be that technical and talented, but in terms of a workhorse, someone who sells well, someone who's going to be in all those matches, even get a mid-card title maybe and run with it. But he's someone who's definitely going to be, you need someone to go out there for 20 minutes. You can tell him to go out there and go 20 minutes and put over someone. He'll do it. So I think that's his future in NXT. And if he continues that on Raw or SmackDown, he's going to make a good deal of money.
Absolutely. I mean, Kelly always says, if you can be the Miz, be the Miz.
Exactly. And you know, the Miz showed last night he's able to bust out some things here and there because he's been the Miz for so long, I guess. And the thing with Gallus, too, is he popped off on them because they made it seem like they're the ones to make the call to the feds about Tony D'Angelo. Now, I don't know if he's listening, but on my report, Wayne Hollander commented and asked if anyone brought up the fact that the snitch could be two dimes. I think I brought that up last week kind of in jest. I don't know. I have no idea anymore. I don't know if he exclusively signed to AEW, if it was for how long, and I don't know if his sort of one-year period without signing to WWE, whatever it was for, is over yet. So,
it almost is June 11th.
June 11th?
Year.
Okay.
June 11th last year.
How do you know that off the top of your head?
I Googled it.
Oh, there you go. So there is definitely a chance that it is two dimes, and I did bring this up last week. Again, it was more in jest, but that would make the most sense, right? He somehow survived being off by D'Angelo and Stax, and now he's coming home to let their actions kind of take a hold and bite them in the ass. And so that would make the most storyline sense. But, again, it would require them extending this at least another 2 weeks because of the 1 year, and then re-debuting two dimes, who, honestly, I don't even remember what he looks like, so I don't know what kind of a reaction he would get.
I was literally just trying to find a picture of him because I was just thinking, I'm like, I don't remember what the dude looked like. I remember, like, when there was two of them being, like, which one's Dash, which one's Dawson.
Exactly.
I just found a picture of him, I think.
Message that to me because I have no idea what he looks like.
Yeah, I will. I'll do that right now. I'll put it in the Skype chat. But yeah, he's, I mean, honestly, he looks very, just very basic, unassuming Italian. So yeah. Anyway, guys, I guess look up Troy Two Dimes Donovan and commit that face to memory, because there's a good chance he may wind up showing up here, especially where the 1 year suspension is almost up. It was June 11th and he was supposedly gone for a year due to the wellness violation or whatever it was. I forget what it was.
Why does he look like a short Chris Masters?
Oh my God. He does kind of look like a short Chris Masters.
okay.
Yeah. We'll see.
I'm
going to
remember him as short Chris Masters and see if that sticks with me.
Although, looking at his, because he's Cole,
like Chris Masters.
He's Cole Carter in AEW, and he still has the AEW branding and stuff on his Twitter. So I don't know. I'm not sure. Well, it's a possibility, but I think it might actually be less of a possibility now that I see that.
Well, then who is it then? Because if it's not Gallus, is it? I said last week, I'm thinking it's actually Stax, but I don't know.
What the hell was the name of that dude that was the lawyer?
Oh, Luca Crispino.
Yeah. Like, I think that kind of makes sense.
Was he ever a lawyer for Diego? Is the thing. So, I mean, yeah, I think that there's some gaps they need to fill in, right?
Oh, yeah. There'd definitely be gaps there, but I think if you're looking for somebody, that would make sense. But because I think it was the week before D'Angelo got locked up, there was a, what the hell was his name again? Luca Christian?
Crucifino.
Wow. I'm the Italian one. But there was a vignette of him standing on like some steps, I think outside of a courthouse, calling out D'Angelo.
Huh.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So that's something that's, But that's I think probably my first pick.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think it would make sense. So let us go and talk about the last match before we get into the rest of the segments here tonight. We saw Cora Jade versus Ivy Nile, 4 minutes and 8 seconds. This match saw who won? I actually wrote down the winner to every match except for this one.
Cora Jade
won this one. So, Ivy Nile, because Ivy Nile was in this match, so there was an Ava run-in. That's right. I finally found my notes. So Cora Jade earlier in the night was running her mouth backstage in the women's locker room, essentially kind of saying that everybody should be celebrating her and not Tiffany Stratton tonight. Ivy Nile took a little bit of an exception to this and for lack, all intents and purposes, told her to shut up and stop running her mouth. Cora Jade essentially took a little exception of that as well. And this match was made for the two of them later on in the night. Not a bad match whatsoever. I thought there was some great character work from Cora Jade, especially as the match started off. Cora Jade had a was sporting quite the shiner after her match last week. She got punched in the face or kicked in the face. I forget what caused the black eye, but I know what happened last week.
Probably a spinning kick.
I think it was a spinning kick. That's why I corrected myself. But she had quite the shiner. You know, a couple broken blood vessels in her in like the white of her eye as well. It was kind of gnarly looking. And immediately, the first thing, as soon as Nile and Jade locked up, she just immediately recoiled, and, oh, my eye, and then went ahead and used the cheap, she's faking it the whole time, and just cheaply attacked Ivy Nile. So I kind of liked some of that, those small little details, those little bits of character work here and there.
The 80s heel work.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, I feel like she is really starting to... So actually, this is how I said it in the hits and misses. She's either starting to finally find her groove as this character, or she's finally starting to figure out how to convey this character properly and how she's wanted to convey it. And they've wanted her to convey this character the whole time. And I think that's been evident over the last handful of weeks to months with Cora Jade. you know, like I said, short match here. Ava ended up coming out and attacking Ivy Nile as the two of them have been doing and interfering in one another's matches for seemingly since the dawn of time at this point. Directly led to Cora Jade picking up the win. A little bit later on in the night, we saw Ivy Nile and the rest of Diamond Mine, the Creed brothers, I guess, walking backstage, going up to a camera, and essentially she called out Ava for next week and told her to put her money where her mouth is. Schism and Ava walk up to them, kind of leads into this bit of a backstage brawl before it got pulled apart, but the match was made. So next week we will finally see Ava versus Ivy Nile. I'm looking forward to this match, but probably not for the right reasons. I'm hoping this match goes off without a hitch. Ivy Nile is still, I don't want to say green, because she has made leaps and bounds from where she was in her debut match. So I don't want to say she's green, but I mean, she's still learning. She's still new. And Ava is definitely green. So Ivy is the one that's going to have to kind of carry the match. And I'm hoping she's up to the task. I feel like if anybody can do it, she probably can. So I'm hopeful that it's going to go off and going to work. I'm hoping Ava can hold up her end of the bargain. What we've seen out of her in the few times she's been in the ring hasn't been great. And again, I hate saying that about anybody, but it wasn't as I think it didn't live up to the expectations, I guess. Not that I want to compare her to her father by any stretch of the imagination. She's not her father. But I don't think she was necessarily even where she should have been to be on TV. I think she probably needed a little bit more time off TV and learning before her first match after what we've seen so far. So I don't know. I'm hoping that it was nerves or whatever. And, you know, in this singles match with Ivy Nile, we'll actually see what Ava can do and bring to the table here. There's also the distinct possibility that the match doesn't happen and, you know, the Creeds wind up interfering or I don't know why I said the Creeds, because I meant to say Schism winds up interfering or, you know, causing some sort of an issue that calls the match off or something like that. There's always an out there too that could delay this for another week or two or what have you, maybe even to the Great American Bash. Let's talk about, I'll throw it over to you, talk about Cora Jade, Ivy Nile, and all the rest.
Yeah, so Ivy Nile come a long way in a lot of different ways. And so at the end of the match, or when they went to the back, it wasn't that they found a camera. Mackenzie Mitchell was in the back with the camera trying to get a word with them. And that's when Nile went up and made the challenge. And so I think they left it ambiguous enough here to where we either can get a singles match and a tag match next week, or we get a six-person tag match. I guess it depends on how they feel heading into next week and what they see in terms of Ava and Nile, and if they want to have a singles match between those two on NXT. Because they basically made the challenge to Ava and then to the Dyad, but they didn't necessarily say, you know, I challenge you to a match. It was more like next week, you and me, or, you know, next week we'll settle or something like that. It was still ambiguous enough to where it could be a six-person tag. And so at the end, when Ava tried to interfere, Nile turned it around on her and put the Dragon Slayer on while leaning over the top rope, and then Jade hit a knee to the back and the double arm DDT, which is her new finisher, for the victory. And so, that was a different segment. So with the Creeds and with Dyad and all these things, again, we know they're leaving in October, I believe it is, when the contract is up. So I don't think anyone sees them winning any of their feuds. And so I guess you could use them to put people over it, but it's just some of that expectedness the predictability of it, I guess, takes me a bit out of it. But, you know, they're still professional. They're still out there doing their things. They're not slacking or anything like that. So kudos to them. And I guess this is going to make Kelly mad, because on Sunday he was pretty adamant that, or I guess not adamant, but he was, I guess, hopeful that this meant that Ava would be done with Schism. But instead, right away, they're right back together. So, yeah, I'm not sure what else you can say beyond that besides Cora's character is, she's grown and she's found out ways to make that character work in the ring much better than she has over the past 16 to 18 months.
Okay, so let's see. What else do we have to talk about here tonight? I'm going to throw a bunch of segments at you. I'm going to throw two at you, not a bunch. So we had a replay of the Chase University segment from Battleground where Charlie Dempsey and Drew Gulak were teaching the Chase University students, and they started to point out the faults of Thea Hale, and we saw Thea Hale get a little upset at the poking fun of, I guess, or picking on that she was getting. And she stormed out of the room. We then saw another segment. I forget if it was directly after this or if it was a little bit later on, but we saw another segment where Drew Gulak was teaching Chase University in-ring, basically doing some sort of in-ring drills with them. And we saw Thea Hale and Duke Hudson on the apron of this training ring, where Thea Hale, she's clearly upset. She's like really spastic and kind of Ultimate Warrior-esque on the apron, and talking about how she wants to do it. She wants to get in there. She wants to show the world how she can do it. And I forget exactly how she worded it. She worded it a lot better than I just did, but essentially wanted to show the world that she can actually do the wrestling. And she wound up asking Duke Hudson for permission, grabbed him by his shirt, and he told her to let go, but get in the ring, and she did, and she started to square off again with Charlie Dempsey as they kind of cut away. So we had that segment. We saw her a little bit later on in the night in another segment. That segment was the Tiffany Stratton celebration, or what did she call it? The Tiffibration?
Tiffibration.
Tiffibration, thank you. The Tiffibration, Tiffany's celebration of winning her NXT Women's Championship at Lowell, Massachusetts Battleground. Tiffany came to the ring. She asked the whole locker room to come out and celebrate with her. Nobody came out at first, but eventually she was able to coax them out of the back. And then she said that nobody is worthy of being the contender. So in order to settle on who's going to be the number one contender, we're going to have another battle royal next week to name the number one contender for the title. And shortly thereafter, after she made that announcement, we saw a bunch of women get in the ring to attack her. But the first one to get in the ring was Thea Hale. And kind of showing the fire that she had earlier in the night, Tiffany Stratton did pick on Thea Hale in the middle of this. After the women kind of back up a minute or two in the segment here, after the women came out and surrounded the ring, reluctantly came out and surrounded the ring, Tiffany basically went around and said, you know, did one of the typical mean girls, like, you're not worthy, you're not worthy, you're not worthy. And she got Thea Hale and said something different, like, you're definitely not worthy. I forget exactly what she said, but essentially singling,
why are you even out here?
Thank you. But essentially singling out Thea Hale and the fact that, like, she, you know, she's never won a match and she's had issues doing the wrestling thing. So that's what that is why Thea Hale was the first one in the ring to attack. But we also saw quite a few others get in there, like Lyra, Perez, Henley, Cora Jade, but primarily I think it was just about everybody else, the women's roster, maybe minus the members of Dar's crew. I don't remember seeing them out there.
I'm not sure if I saw Lyra Valkyrie or not out there either.
Oh, no, she was flying dive to the outside at one point.
Was that her? I couldn't tell. Usually, yeah. I think because she didn't have her eye sort of like makeup glitter.
Yeah, she was in her civvies. She wasn't all made up, but yeah, she was out there.
Okay. There were a few out there that I did not recognize, so they're probably on level up.
Yeah, exactly. There were quite a few. Well, it wasn't as many women as I thought.
Yeah,
they were going to be out there.
They showed 17 on the graphic for the Battle Royal, and of the 17,
yeah, they're definitely
there were
not 17.
Four, I think, that I did not recognize on the graphic.
Yeah, and there were definitely not 17 women out ringside. I don't think.
Yeah, no,
anyway.
Like 12.
Yeah, that'd say maybe, yeah, 10 or 12, like something like that. But yeah, I guess, I mean, I don't know. I wish there was a different way or they had another way of finding the first contender for Tiffany Stratton. I'm not over the moon about another battle royal to make, you know, to name a contender for a title. I feel like we've seen this at NXT a million times, whether it be for the women's title or something else. I guess really in NXT or WWE as a whole, we've seen it a million times.
Pro wrestling, AEW does,
yeah,
that on a Sunday team.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Before,
so,
a title, not just for a number one contender.
You know, it's. I feel like it's in case of emergency, break glass and have a battle royal. You know, mm-hmm. it's almost they can't think of something else. I don't know.
They just did a tournament, so they can't go back to that.
Right. Like that's what I mean. Is we just had some sort of a tournament or some sort of a gimmick match to determine the number one contender. Now we're, rather than building an organic feud, we're now building a feud based off who wins. I don't know. I'm not crazy about it. I guess it really depends on who winds up winning that battle royal. I don't actually have the list of competitors in front of me to really even think about that at the moment, who might come out on top. Haven't even really given that any thought until just this moment. But yeah, we'll see where that goes. So let me throw to you on these two segments that involve Thea Hale.
Well, and the big issue is that the person that's most ready to be a contender right now is also a heel, and that's the returning wrestler we'll get to later in the evening, or a later segment. The segment right after this, actually.
That's a good point. Well, you know what? So we can talk about it. Let's rope it in. So Danny Palmer comes out and says that, hey, this attacker that has been attacking people, this masked attacker, said that they were going to reveal themselves tonight, and she was sick of waiting and asked herself to come out and reveal herself. And it was indeed Blair Davenport. It's not anybody we thought of until I believe it was the VIP roundtable when
the very end of it.
It was like the very end of the roundtable. I think you saw something on Twitter or something, and you're like, somebody's saying it's Blair Davenport, and we're,
yeah,
the three of us go, oh yeah.
The homie said he's like, it's gonna be Davenport. I told him today, I said, my man said you were right.
Yep. So it made the most sense, because I mean, we were scratching our heads at who it could be, and yeah, I mean, we haven't seen Blair Davenport in quite some time, so mm-hmm. I mean that she's kind of out of sight, out of mind. So
if I remember correctly, was her last match that triple threat match, Sadamura, Perez, and her? Was that it?
Oh wow, it might be.
Is that the unification bout or the title bout? One of the, something like that.
That might have been. That might
that
have been.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up. But. But yeah, like that certainly could have been. So now we know Blair Davenport. So feel free to lump that in.
Yeah, so I'll start from the very first, like I did with the Chase U segment with Dempsey and Gulak. One of the Chase U students who was in that segment is someone that one of my friends actually works out with at the local gym. Or has worked at a gym. So that was a nice little, I don't know the wrestler's name because he was one of the students. So, but that's a little nice sneak peek there, or a nice little connection there. And so here in this segment, I thought the stupidest thing, the thing that really took me out of it, was Hale is sitting there yelling at Chase, or yelling at Hudson,
right?
And everyone else doesn't hear her, even though they're standing on the ring apron with everyone else. I just, like, y'all don't hear her grabbing and yelling at Hudson to let her go in and do this. I thought that was just so dumb, but that aside, you have Hale's energy and she gets in there, and then they leave it again, another ambiguous spot here where they show her and Dempsey square off, but then they cut away and they never come back to it. So we haven't seen yet. I'm guessing next week we might see the continuation of what happened there, but that's something they kind of gave us a little not a cliffhanger, but they're dangling that in front of us to keep us coming back and want to know what happens between
I wonder if they can't show that, because it would technically be male on female violence, even though they're training. I don't know.
Whenever I see in MMA, they show a lot of training and grappling, especially between men and women. So I don't know if that would necessarily be an issue, but I guess that could be. I wasn't thinking of that because I'm like, all right, here we go, grappling. Let's see what happens. But that could very well be the case.
I mean, they could technically show up. I mean, WWE doesn't like the show.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, this is also the company that back in the day had Bubba Ray Dudley's Powerbomb. Who was it? May Young threw a table.
May Young.
Whatever.
And then after that, she farted on him.
Well, you know, hey.
That's humor. That's one of my favorite Bubba Ray stories. Is he talking about that, and right afterwards, he just smelt the fart waft up. He had to no sell it.
He was just like staring.
Yep,
like,
just staring off blankly into space. Yeah, and he couldn't crack a smile or anything. Like he was like, he's like, it took me everything to just not break.
I think he also said that she told him that you better power bomb me through this MF or something like that. Like really told him to give it lay it in there on the power bomb.
Yeah. No, May Young is like one of, I love May Young. But she basically told him like, don't treat me like, you know, don't treat me like one of the boys, I think is what she said.
So, and this was when she was like 80. So whatever. Then when you get to Tiffany Stratton's segment, so I'm going to focus a bit on Stratton here and then come back to the rest of the women, especially Hale. So when Stratton came out, I thought she looked fine. I didn't see any sort of hesitancy, any sort of intimidation of being the top champion. But it seemed like once she grabbed the mic, the moment may have hit her a little bit, because it sounded like there were, I think, twice where she fought the line or two. And then I've never heard this before in a Stratton promo, but there were audible big sighs between some of her lines, and I think that was her trying to remember or to settle herself down. And I've never seen her do that, whether it was a live promo or a pre-recorded promo. So I think some of it was hitting her there. And so the promo didn't come off as great as a usual Stratton promo would come off. However, she was able to work through it, and she still maintained her character. And even through the flub lines and some of it not making sense, she still showed her power of character. I do think they went a little bit wrong at the end where she was screaming mean girl like and blaming everyone for her getting knocked out of the ring. But I do think that, again, this is a developmental show. You need to be able to both have space to succeed and space to fail. She didn't fail, but she didn't definitely succeed. It was probably like a C+ tonight in terms of her promo. And in that regard, there's definitely room to improve, of course. But also, I think if you were watching in the back and you're Shawn Michaels, you're Road Dogg, you're Molly Holly, you're Beth Phoenix or whoever is looking at them, I think you're comfortable in understanding that she will reach her potential, if not more, and you just got to be patient and let her grow as she's the champion. And so for me, like, it could have gone better. She could have been a little smoother, but she didn't bomb. She didn't lose the crowd. There were no what chants. She worked through her struggles. I feel like even with the negatives, you saw a lot of the positives, especially in terms of being able to collect herself and work through. Now, the size, she's going to have to get away from doing that because it's such a big tell. But beyond that, I think you see why we've been so high on her and why we said she has the most defined character and advocated for her to be the next champion so strongly. Did you want to add anything to that before?
It just dawned on me. You were saying size as an S-I-G-H. I was thinking you were saying S-I-Z-E, and I'm like, how does that make sense? Okay.
Right.
All right.
So
cool.
For tonight, she was definitely letting out some big sighs in between.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. So, yeah.
It's getting late. It's getting late. My brain isn't working right.
To the rest of the women in the segment there, So she kind of did the play haters ball thing, or it's like, I hate you, I don't even know you, and I hate your guts. But it was more like, I could beat you, why are you even out here, you don't belong here. And that was specifically pointed at Thea Hale, and that's why she was the first one to get in the ring. So if you look at who entered the ring, this could be a signal of what might be to come. It was Thea Hale, Roxanne Perez, Lyra Valkyria, and Fallon Henley. Henley was the only one who didn't lay hands on Tiffany Stratton, but the other three did. So it could be a final four of those next week, and then we see who goes from there. If I had to choose between those four, I'd probably go with Fallon Henley right now to give Stratton just a definitive title retention in her first big match as champion. And then you can then work others up, because I don't know if you want to go back to Perez right now, and Valkyria and her just had that match too. Thea Hale, definitely, I just don't think she's ready for that sort of match. But Henley has steadily improved. Again, one of the people I pointed out during the breakout tournament, her character and her in-ring work has definitely been much better. So if it does come down to those four, I would vouch for Henley, just because it'd be a nice stopgap between Stratton and whoever her actual big feud ends up being heading into the Great American Bash. That's right.
Yeah, no, I think you're pretty spot on. A lot of times they do kind of have a little bit of a tell or foreshadowing or something like that. And I think, especially with, you know, as we were just talking about too, you know, there were a lot of women in the ring we didn't really know. And those being the ones that were prominent in this segment, you're probably right. They're probably going to wind up being the ones to finish it. I think I'm kind of leaning towards Fallon Henley too. I think he talked me into it. Not that I really had a choice one way or another before, but I think it makes the most sense right now. Everybody else.
Again, I'm only basing this off of the four people that were in the ring to end that segment
and go after Stratton.
It could be anybody, but I mean, it could be Jakara Jackson. It could be Lash Legend. Who knows? But I think if it does come down to those four, Henley's probably going to take my bet, even though I don't bet on wrestling.
No, and I think it makes sense from a couple different standpoints, because Henley has been, you know, she's been very prominent in, you know, she's got a lot of TV time over the past, handful of months, you know, with her story with Brooks Jensen and Kiana James and all of that. And, you know, I feel like she's, we keep talking about how impressed we are with her ability in the ring, as well as her promo ability and in ring, or mic work rather. That's definitely improved. It's not where, you know, it probably needs to be, but it's definitely improved, over the last year or so. But I also don't necessarily see her as NXT championship material right yet. However, where she has gotten all that TV time and whatnot, I could see her as a credible challenger, but one that Tiffany Stratton should be able to easily beat and kind of give her that first definitive win. So I like that idea. I'm not saying that's necessarily where I think they'll go, like, for sure, but I like the idea. I definitely like the idea.
And quickly on Davenport.
Yes.
What was interesting to me is Vic Joseph called her the top gaijin, which was what she was called in Stardom. And if you don't know, gaijin in Japanese means foreigner. And when she was in Stardom, she was the big bad heel, right? And being the big bad white woman, the gaijin. So interesting that I caught Vic Joseph saying that at the very end of the segment. So Blair Davenport is definitely someone who is going to be or should be NXT champion someday. Now, the issue is right now Stratton is the heel. I discussed on Sunday that I think they should probably try and pull a breaker sometime with her and try and turn her face and see what happens, because she was getting Valkyrie was getting booed the hell out of the building, and Stratton was getting all the cheers. People want to cheer her as much of a heel as she is, because they know, they see the talent and they see the character work and they respect it. Now, I know that just makes Kelly so angry, because that's not how you're supposed to go about cheering and booing people in wrestling, right? But if that's the case, I think you need to run with it, and sooner rather than later have her make the turn, and that way you can't have someone like Davenport in the picture and take the title off of her, because I also agree with Kelly. Stratton doesn't need to have the title. Stratton doesn't need to be in NXT any longer. But it will make her better for when she does go up to Raw and SmackDown, as I said on Sunday. If you're not VIP, I'm just going to kind of quickly go over it. For her to be able to go through two different characters and then being able to carry that title down here will make it less likely that something like this, like something like tonight, will happen on a larger audience with Raw or SmackDown when she does become champion for the first time. At least now she has the feeling and what it's like to get that the starstruck moment of being under the lights and like, oh, I'm the champion now. I'm running the show. Now she knows. So I feel like there's just so much more gain for Tiffany Stratton and for WWE if they do turn her face and have her with a face run before they do move her on to Raw or SmackDown, probably Raw. And I think Davenport would be the perfect person to have her have that sort of face heel dynamic and then drop the title to. And Davenport could be sort of that dominant heel, dominant sort of giant champion that they haven't really had since Rhea Ripley, right? I don't think Raquel Gonzalez or Raquel Rodriguez at the time was that dominant of a champion. I mean, I barely remember her reign. So I think this could be a way to sort of reassert. You had Roxanne Perez, you get Tiffany Stratton, and then you go into Davenport. And again, it's about the developmental talent, and not just the developmental talent, but the ones that you see as future stars.
And you are correct. The last time we saw Blair Davenport in the ring was the triple threat unification match, Mandy Rose versus Blair Davenport versus Mako Satomura.
Right. Not Roxanne Perez, Mandy Rose. That's
yep.
right.
Yep. So, back in September, that
wow.
was Worlds Collide.
I thought it was Worlds Collide, but I could, again, time is just, I have no idea anymore.
Oh, God, no, I know. We're still in, like, I feel like this is, like, the 40th or 50th month of 2020. Like, you know, so I hear you. Believe me, I hear you. Okay, let's see. What else haven't we talked about yet? We already talked about that. I'm going to get rid of that. Hold on. Here we go. So, we saw Axiom and Scripps backstage. Axiom called him Reggie, and he's like, no, call me Scripps. That's Scripps. That's what they call me. And he's like, who calls you? He's like, yeah, we'll talk about that later. And then I honestly just – this is what I wrote down. Axiom and Scripps meet up backstage, and Scripps says to call him Scripps and not Reggie. Reggie basically says a bunch of random bullshit that I didn't care about, and I just wish he was back to chasing the 24/7 title after that nonsense. So that's what I thought about that. I don't even know what to make of that whole Reggie segment. I really don't. All I can think of is Axiom deserves so much better than this. I don't know if you have any, well, let me throw to a couple other things here and then we'll talk about that. Yeah. We only got four other segments here. We saw Von Wagner and Mr. Stone backstage. Mr. Stone was flipping out at Von Wagner. This segment was taking place last week. It was a recap of something we didn't see last week. Mr. Stone was flipping out at Von Wagner over getting DQ'd and not caring about the consequences of getting DQ'd and kind of going over the top. He's like, you could have lost your free agent status. He says, whatever went on in your past has caused some serious anger issues for Wagner, and that Wagner needs therapy. This kind of just originally just pissed Wagner off a little bit more. And he's like, oh, you just want me to waste my money, until Mr. Stone says, what? If it's about money, I'll pay for it. And it seemed like Von Wagner actually thought about it for a moment. He patted Mr. Stone on the back and gave him almost a slightly sincere, I'll think about it. Immediately after the segment, Vic Joseph and Booker T were kind of saying, wow, that's a big step for Von Wagner. So I can't think of the guy's name that helped out Team Hell No, the name of the doctor off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking of that too.
But maybe we'll see him. It was something stupid. I remember that, but maybe we'll see him show up and do some sort of a therapy session with Von Wagner and Mr. Stone next week. So we saw that. We also saw an Ilya Dragunov vignette that primarily recapped the match at Battleground. It showed a little bit of the feud between him and Dijak leading up to the match at Battleground, but it primarily recapped the match at Battleground and Dragunov's win, and kind of the whole theme of it was, he can take a lot of pain, and tonight the world will know his pain. By tonight I meant Battleground, but he said tonight the world will know his pain. And then they hyped his return to NXT for next week. We also saw Inoue and Blade backstage hyping up Eddie Thorpe after his loss last week. Damon Kemp walked up to Eddie Thorpe, picked a fight with him by saying that he can't win without cheating. And that kind of pissed Eddie Thorpe off, and he wound up attacking Kemp, which Inoue and Blade kind of held him back. And it looks like a match was officially made between the two of them for next week. And the last segment that we haven't talked about yet was Hank and Tank hyping each other up backstage, saying that they're tighter than ever after teaming together. And there was a very clear bromance forming there. They're like, they're very close to one another, staring each other in the eyes. And I'm even thinking to myself, this is very Stepbrothers-esque, right?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, they go into the whole Stepbrothers segment about where they start blurting out their favorite things at the same time. And I was like, oh yes, this is where they're going with it.
All that was missing was, did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Do you want to go to karate in the garage? Yep.
You know, and like I was kind of half expecting to hear that, but I don't know, maybe they couldn't say that. Copyright. I have no idea. But I personally loved that. I thought it was great. I really like the Hank and Tank duo. Like I was saying, I think last week, I get some Heavy Machinery vibes from them. Which
you just had that for weeks, to be fair.
Okay, cool. But speaking of Heavy Machinery, there was somebody who was sitting in front of me at Battleground who had a sign that says, to be fair, I miss Tucky. And I was just like, no, man, so do I. It was such a weird, like, weird sign. There was, and then at the bottom of the sign, there was, like, this picture of the Among Us guy. I was like, I don't understand what this has to do with Tucky, but whatever, man. Anyway, back to Hank and Tank. So after a little, like, Stepbrothers little back and forth, we saw Inoue and Blade yet again. And they were like, we know each other better than you know each other. We can do that. And they try to blurt something out at the same time, you know, one of their favorite things at the same time. And, of course, they can't. It kind of ends the segment there. I forget exactly what Blade said as everybody
was looking. The first one was... the first thing they did was best day to work out. They didn't get that right. It was best pizza topping. And I swear one of them said bologna and the other said pineapple. I was like, pineapple?
I heard pineapple, but I don't.
Yeah.
Bologna, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I know, right? You get mad about pineapple, you're saying bologna on pizza. But then after they walked away, because Inoue's like, we are not fighting each other. I think Blaze said something along the lines of, but what if that makes us better?
I kind of want to take fried bologna and pineapple and put it on pizza.
Okay, that's too white for me.
I'm very white.
Yeah, that's very true. The other part about this, though, is where does Briggs and Jensen fit into this? Because they put the idea into their brains, and then Booker T's been so adamant that this is not what's best for them. So I think we have a little triangle going right here.
A little bit, yeah. I think you might be right. I think you might be right. So anything on these other segments? So we had the Scripps and Axiom thing, Von Wagner, Mr. Stone, Ilya Dragunov, the first Inoue Blade segment with Eddie Thorpe, and then the second one with Hank and Tank.
Yeah, so I won't hit the very last one since we just talked about that. But when we talk about Axiom and Scripps, when Axiom said, who calls you that? And your family's like, no, my people. And I'm thinking that by
who are your people?
By saying my people, and considering his age and our age, I wonder if Scripps was like his avatar name or something in some kind of chat room or some kind of online space.
And you know,
that's where the name
that
comes
makes
from.
Sense.
Yeah.
Especially considering like the hacker thing and
sense. So to me, his people is the space he found online that he could be himself, and he found people that agreed with him and that he could feel comfortable. It could be, back. It could be Maybe he was on wrestling message boards back in the day. Maybe he was on Asian Avenue or Zanga or any of those things, right?
Oh, my God, Zanga.
Exactly. So I think my people, it's sort of a red herring to be like, oh, you know, black people, whatnot. But I think it's supposed to be an online space. And if you think about the character, like you said, and you think about how the name is spelled and everything, it has, to me, it has clear demarcations of being some sort of online or avatar name. So I think that's where it's going. He thanks Axiom for taking off his mask and exposing him to the light. He said something about, with my mask on, I was in the cave watching shadows, basically. And so I almost thought, I wonder if the end game here is for Scripps to get Axiom to unmask and say that you need to also unmask to see the light and we get the return of A-Kid, or we get Axiom without the mask, sort of like Ray with the filthy animals. But like you said, we brought up Axiom as a potential contender for Hayes until I brought up the fact that he's stuck with Hayes and Scripps and Duplicato right now. So we're all high on him is the thing. And I guess if you don't see him as your title contender right now in any of the singles contenders or any of the singles championships, then at least having him on TV is better than nothing. But yeah. And then the Von Wagner, Mr. Stone thing. So I like how Stone framed it here as in you're blowing your opportunities by going out there and acting like you know everything and getting disqualified. You don't get paid if you don't win. You don't get paid if you're not a free agent anymore, all these different things, right? So he didn't bring that part up, but if you listen to his word, that's basically what's insinuated. And he also said that not only would he pay for it, but he implored to Wagner, do it for me. And that's what kind of made Wagner butt. And, you know, a couple weeks ago after he stood up for him against Crucifino, he said, you stood up for me, didn't you? And Wagner's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. So we're starting to see a little bit of the layers pulled back with him and more of a humanity to him. And it comes in regard, and it comes directly to the person who's been trying so hard to get him over. So I like the little bits we're getting here between the two, and also the further sort of growth we see in terms of this angle they've been going for about a month now in terms of the baby picture. And again, another therapy thing with Red Roxanne Perez and talking about through her anxieties, Gigi Dolan talking about going through abuse. So a lot of these things that are more relatable to a lot of people because they've also undergone those situations in their lives. And I like how they, I guess I just appreciate that they're not scared to go there, and they're not doing it in a very cartoonish, or they're not mocking it at all. They're trying to really tell a story within one that's generalizable enough, but also not so flattened that comes a caricature of itself. So good job there. And then with Thorpe, Inoue and Blade, remember Damon Kemp lost to Thorpe because the apron came up. And even though Kemp kind of brought it up, he thought it was cheating because he went to go fix it and then turned into the finisher and lost the match. So we're getting a rematch here between the two next week. And I think it's good for Eddie Thorpe that even on a show he wasn't wrestling on, they found a way to include him, even if it was just 30 seconds, to keep it in the viewers' minds that he is someone to keep an eye on as you move forward throughout the rest of the year and into 2024.
All right, I think with that, that's going to bring us to the end of our show. So I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses for PWTorch.com. So check that out. I usually try to get them up as soon as NXT is off the air. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And my report for the show tonight is up with my detailed thoughts. And again, if you haven't gone VIP, go VIP so you can listen to our VIP roundtable for Battleground, which top to bottom, I think was, from what I can gather, the best card of the weekend and one of the best PLE/takeovers that NXT has put on in some time.
Absolutely. And since we didn't plug it yet, if you do go VIP, you can also listen to Tom Stoup and Kelly Wells 8YB NXT 8 years back, where they talk about. They watch NXT and talk about NXT as it was 8 years ago. And Tom Stoupe also has another podcast in the VIP called Bonus Point, where he talks about the upcoming stars in NXT, some of the new developmental talent that may have not hit NXT TV, as well as kind of recapping Level Up. So those are a couple other shows you can check out if you go VIP. But until next time, I'm Nate Lindberg, and we'll see you next week. Take care.